Adam Amin, television voice of the Chicago Bulls.
Giddy for the win!
MLB NFL play-by-play broadcaster for Fox.
Stonehouse with pressure, a block. It's scooped up by the Bears. Back the other way. Jonathan Owens. Touchdown, Chicago. That ball's loose. It is out. It is the Bears that have it. Power Eccles ends up with it. And it was Austin Booker who made the impact to knock it away from yours again.
Adam Amin on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We love talking to Adam Amin as we broadcast live through the Scores Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. He is an MLB announcer. He is an NFL announcer. And he's also, oh, by the way, the Bulls play-by-play announcer for CHSN. And he DJs. We're with the DJ, Adam Amin. Where's your next gig? Let's just start with that.
God, I don't know. Like, now we get to this time. This is now back focusing on the NFL. We're getting ready for baseball playoffs. I got a couple of baseball games in September, so the bookings, I think, start to fade away a little bit. I'm updating like YouTube and all that from like a best of summer, and like got to play a festival and played a bunch of clubs and got to play in Kansas City after the Bears game a couple of weeks ago. So I'll upload some stuff on YouTube at some point, but no, I think we're ready for the season to start.
How therapeutic is that part of your life compared to what we just heard on that intro with how sports goes?
I think they're both the same for different reasons. I think the process is very similar. I've talked about that with you guys. I've talked about that with Lawrence and Matt. I've talked to friends about it. Like, the process is the same. It's preparation. What do you think is going to work? What's important? What's not? What's going to work in this setting? What stories are applicable in this broadcast? What music is applicable in this room? You prepare for it. You hope it goes well. Sometimes it doesn't always go well. And afterwards, you hope it went well. And if it went well, you usually walk out of the room thinking, all right, decent job. And then you go, when's the next one? And we move on to the next thing.
Crowd pleaser when it comes to announcing, crowd pleaser when it comes to DJing. But I feel like you also basically describe perhaps how coaches might feel about the Bears preseason. You announced 2 out of the 3 preseason games with Jim Miller and Stacey Dales and, of course, Luke Kanellis. What were your takeaways based on what you got to see as an aggregate through all that?
I think slow start, speed up. That's what the offense kind of seemingly felt like after, you know, obviously the Buffalo game notwithstanding, but, you know, kind of going against some of the twos. I think just a little sloppy at times, which is, I guess, to be expected with a new install, with a young quarterback, with a first-time head coach. I think those are understandable things. I think because of where our expectations were for both Caleb Williams and Ben Johnson, and I'm sure a lot of us, as the case is in every NFL city across the country, everybody's expectations based off the good stuff usually is fairly high. Our expectations, I think, are fairly high this year based off of the track record of Ben Johnson, based off of what we believe in Caleb Williams to be, what we saw from this defense and the names that we're familiar with, the improvements on the offensive line, some of the new names and faces that we're excited about on offense. I think for all those reasons, our expectations are fairly high. I think the typical NFL problems are going to befuddle the Bears for at least a month, you know, and that's not going to be easy facing Minnesota and Brian Flores' defense out of the gate, facing Detroit, which I'm sure is going to be a very emotional game for all parties involved in week 2. I don't think the schedule is very easy, you know, right out of the gate. Obviously, the schedule is hard because you're facing arguably 2 of the best divisions and your own in the North and then the AFC North. So this always happens. This is the arc of August every year. Great offseason. We're pumped. All right, a little sloppy, but there's a lot to take away positive. We saw really good flashes. I feel really good. It wasn't so great to close, you know, for the starters in the preseason. All right, where are my expectations now? And I think an amalgamation of that, I think the overarching thought process is, at the end of the day, it's a first-year coach with a second-year quarterback. It's going to be a little bit of a struggle at times. You hope the talent level alone is going to be enough to keep the Bears close, and then it's a matter of what it is every week. 7 out of every 10 games in the NFL are a one-score game in the fourth quarter. It's going to come down to executing better than the other team.
That is why the league is so brilliant. As we talk football with Adam Amin, he's the NFL and MLB play-by-play announcer for Fox and Fox Sports, and the Bulls play-by-play announcer, which is not as far away as I thought it was, for CHSN, Football Talk on the Score presented by
Camp
Paramount+.
Camp is on
Plus.
The way, about a month.
Yes.
Not even a month.
Yeah, the first preseason game is the 7th.
Yep.
You can't count on much these days, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount+. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday on CBS and Paramount+, all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. Adam, I have to ask you, as you go into this NFL season and you're looking around, there's always something that comes in late. And usually it's by way of Jerry Jones. And this is no exception. What did you make of the Micah Parsons trade? And I love getting your perspective because you see so much.
Depends on what you feel about Micah Parsons. And it's a binary thing. We know he's good. He is an objectively great NFL player, an objectively great defensive player in the NFL. Do you think he's a generational player who is bound for the Hall of Fame? And certainly the early, you know, first 3-4 year trajectory looks like, yeah, that's the case. What, he's at 10 sacks each of his first handful of years. So certainly the trajectory is there to be that type of player. Do you think what you saw this week when he's had a little bit of a back tweak, is that something that you start to expect now that you get into your later 20s? Now you're getting into your fifth, sixth, seventh season. You're working on a contract that's probably going to take you into your late 20s and into your early 30s. And do you think that injuries are going to start to play a part of it? Because you think, if you think that's the case, you're going, Jerry Jones is selling high. Whether you think he got enough for the trade back, and I would say he didn't, based off of you are treating him as a Hall of Fame, you know, trajectory player. I don't think he got enough back, but I understand that's what he thinks. Hey, I got a couple of big-time picks. I got a defensive tackle I need to shore up my run game. Fine. If you think he's a generational talent, then this is a really stupid move for Jerry Jones. And it's a great, smart, really heads-up move by Brian Gutekunst. It's a smart play by Green Bay, and I don't think they gave up all that much for it. And I think for what they're getting back, that's a risk I think is very much in the take-the-risk category. I think that's in the basket of this is a risk worth taking, because now, and I think Vegas suddenly put the Packers as the favorite to win the division, if I'm not mistaken, or at least their odds went way, way up and closed the gap with Detroit. So I think this is a great move for Green Bay. I think it's kind of a dumb move for Dallas, but it's not surprising based off of how you hear Jerry Jones talk about it.
Yeah, I said earlier, for all the flack, appropriately, that the Bears have gotten for living in the past and having the nostalgia aspect of not just 1985, but you can even go back to the Super Bowl teams of Lovie Smith or the Super Bowl team of Lovie Smith. For all of that, it's still been 30 years since the Cowboys have gotten to an NFC championship game. And that's longer than the Bears.
Yep.
And so that's where I sit with this. They already were going to have trouble in a weak NFC East, relatively speaking, compared to like the North. I still think based on the Giants being in that division, they were still going to have trouble. No doubt the Commanders and the Super Bowl champs and the Eagles were going to be a problem for them. But this, I'm not even out of the gate, I think it hurts Dallas. The better discussion is how much this makes the Green Bay defense that was already good better.
I think it was getting better over the course of the last couple of years. I think it does make them better because this is the level where when Green Bay was great defensively, this is usually the level where you looked at and said, all right, there's somebody to think about. The Clay Matthews of the world certainly stick out. The AJ Hawks of the world certainly stick out. I think this is the position that they need to be able to contend with Penei Sewell. Like, you're trying to make the Deckers and the Sewells of the world, the tackles in this division, feel as uncomfortable as possible, and now you've done that. You're going to make, I mean, I imagine Micah Parsons is very excited to show up against Chicago at some point this year and wonder which tackle am I going to prep for this week? Because that's been one of the biggest questions for the Bears in this preseason and through camp is, well, what's the tackle situation going to look like? Is it probably going to be Braxton Jones and Darnell Wright? Yeah, probably.
Officially announced Braxton Jones.
They have Braxton Jones this week on the depth chart. So there you go. Officially, sure. Is that going to be the case in a month and a half? I don't know. I really don't know. And I feel really good about the interior of the offensive line. And I know Braxton Jones has had good years. And I know Darnell Wright has had solid stretches. I'm not saying they're not capable players. But if there's this much in flux to it, and you're looking at a cross-divisional opponent that you're going to see twice that just improved the second or third most important position in football right now, based off of how passing percentages are, I think passing percentage is like 55%. For it to 45% run or something like that now. It used to be flipped about 10 or 15 years ago. Like, you're passing more than you ever have. Third down and short is a passing down sometimes because it's extension of run game. How much are you creating havoc for opposing tackles and quarterbacks? And Green Bay just got a lot better at that, and I think the Bears haven't done enough to shore up the edges compared to the rest of this division where some of the offensive lines are.
Yeah, one thing's for sure. He only has to go up against that Eagles offensive line once this year as opposed to having to do it twice. So already easier pickings for him. Sure. Looking at the Bears and where they stand coming out of those preseason games, I've been trying to tell people Caleb Williams is a work in progress. This team is a work in progress. And I think a lot of people, there's either people who are pro-Caleb or people who are anti-Caleb. And it's so interesting how it's become so binary at this point. When you talk about even within a fan base, how they feel about their starting quarterback. It's an old trope, but it feels like we've gotten to this highly divisive time even in fan bases. And Caleb is like a perfect example of that.
I think just the binary aspect of the embracing of debate and things like that. I think that's just how discourse has gone in sports for the last 20 years. It's been an ever-evolving thing where you have to take a side, and the lack of nuance in discussing some of this stuff is frustrating, and I understand why. It's a bigger money business than it's ever been, so more people feel that they want to have some kind of opinion on it, because when something is this much of an economic percentage of your everyday life, and for a lot of us, if you're listening to the show, this is a percentage of your everyday life, and because it's such a big business, the NFL in particular, that means it's an economic part of your life. So everybody feels that they need to have an opinion on it, or feel that they have the solution, or tries to apply every portion of their lives to what's happening in sports. Guess who does that? I do. I do that for a living. You guys do that for a living. Anybody who listens to this show has probably done that in some capacity. So the discourse around these guys is very, it's less nuanced than it used to be. I think because the timeline of a lot of these things gets sped up, we expect so much out of these guys right out of the gate. I'm prepping for Denver and Tennessee right now. And it's just funny because I've been bringing up Caleb's name a few times in this, because Caleb had 30 some odd starts in college, right? Cam Ward had 57 starts between multiple levels. I think it was FCS, Incarnate Word, and then he was at Washington State, then at Miami for a year. Bo Nix started more NCAA games than any college quarterback ever. He started 61 of them between some big-time programs in Auburn and Oregon. And these guys, you know, the expectation of Ward is he's going to show up ready and prepared for at least a lot of the baseline stuff that you don't have to prep him for, because he's already been under center for a decent amount of his career. Same thing with Bo Nix. He just took a lot of snaps. He kind of understood the rhythms and processes of it. And yeah, it has to speed up at the NFL level, but I thought he did a pretty good job. Caleb has had decent amount of starting experience in his career, but that doesn't mean that everything that Bo Nix did in his college time is applicable to the NFL. It doesn't mean that everything that Caleb did in college is applicable to the NFL, and the process of getting through a lot of that is the most frustrating thing to watch with young, talented players, and that's going to be the most frustrating thing to watch with a young quarterback in Chicago. It's still going to be a process, and this is a hard change to go from an athletic, improv-based quarterback who's got all the talent in the world to make plays out of nothing and turn him into a majority of the time stand back and read through the progressions in the NFL, because this is a progression-based offensive league. You have to let plays develop. Defensive schemes are more complex and nuanced than they've ever been. So needing your one receiver, your furthest outside receiver, to run his route, to clear a defender out and a potentially a zone linebacker out of that fray to allow your number two receiver, the guy inside of him, to have an out route or to have spacing on the perimeter in a one-on-one situation, that takes 3 seconds. Your offensive line has to hold up, and you still have to be, as a quarterback, have the wherewithal to go 1-2, come back to 2, but look at 3 in case it's open, and then go back to 2. That is a hard change to suddenly drill into a quarterback's head. You have to do this within, let's say, 3.5 seconds every single time. Time to throw an average in the NFL is 2.81. So let's say between a half second shy and a half second beyond that, you got about 3.5 seconds to make this happen. That's a hard thing to change. And I think because of that, understanding the complexities of that, maybe that will give fans a little bit of an understanding as to why we may see some struggles.
I love the nuance there.
Yeah, we're talking to Adam Amin, of course, NFL, Major League Baseball, and Chicago Bulls play-by-play announcer, a man for all seasons, because I am allowed to smile while I talk.
No, I was just like, it seems like you left like, Bulls. Maybe that's why I
think you were reading a lot into that.
that's the way I
think it was just a natural pause.
You're feeling some nuance there. I think it was nuance in the cadence.
No, it was just a natural pause. I do want to add to that, though, because in my opinion, what you see a lot is, I don't like to lump them into one category versus another, and that's it. But there are the quarterbacks who get to make a lot of money because they know how to fix a busted play, and those just don't happen as much in the NFL. And then there's also the quarterbacks who succeed not only with the busted plays, but they aren't showing as much flash because they succeed in what is a more basic concept in college. You know, you're not going to see as many busted plays, for example, even in the SEC.
Sure.
That you're going to see and in the Big Ten than you are in another conference. These are just the truths. I think that makes it hard when quarterbacks get to this point because of their instincts.
Yeah.
And because of those instincts that got them to these places.
Yep.
Not that that's all that Caleb Williams does. I'm not saying that. I don't think he gets a Heisman Trophy if that's the case.
Of course.
But when you know that that's what you're really good at, when you can make something out of nothing, I think it's a really hard thing to unlearn when this is how you got here.
It's worked forever. Why would I change now, right? And it's a great point. And again, that's the thing that you have to marry. Those are the ideas that you have to marry as a coach. And I was talking to my partner, Mark Sanchez, about this, and he went through a very similar circumstance. I think some of the struggles that we hear, and I know the Seth Wickersham book that kind of gave some of the insight as to maybe some of the dysfunctions of last year. Mark was telling me about his first year with the New York Jets. They brought in multiple guys. They brought in Rich Gannon, who was a veteran at the time. Mark Brunell got brought in, and basically to teach Sanchez, and coincidentally one of his backups during that stretch was Kevin O'Connell, now the coach of the Vikings. He had to learn, like, when do I show up? What do I wear? What time do you guys leave for the bus? Which bus should I take? Should I take the first one or the second one? Why do you watch film? What do you do when you watch film? What are you looking for when you watch film? Like, Mark Brunell had to teach Mark Sanchez, all right, what do you see right now? He goes, all right, well, that's an over front. Okay. Come on. What's the next step? He goes, there's an under front in another play. Yeah. And like, he didn't understand that this is the process of, I'm going to watch this film, then I'm going to watch the next play and watch the next and the next and the next and categorize all these things. And I should probably be taking notes in the margins about these when I categorize them. And then I should probably keep track of how many times I saw this versus how many times I saw that. Like, he didn't know this when he first showed up. And this was one of the great college quarterbacks of the 2000s. So to not have that in place, I think this is why Case Keenum is so important this year, right? 13-year NFL vet, just to show Caleb, this is how I did it. Maybe that's how it will work for you, but you need to have some form of a process here. And it's so difficult to drill just that out of somebody's head, let alone what you're going to do in the 3.5 seconds that you possibly have to make a play on the offensive end when there is a busted play or when the protection on the first read doesn't look just right. Can I trust that? Do I move on? Can I trust that I can move on based off that? There's all these little nuanced things that it's really hard to drill that out of guys. Jared Goff was a Super Bowl quarterback with the Rams. He was not the Jared Goff, though, that we know now. And Ben Johnson obviously had a lot to do with that. Dan Campbell had a lot to do with that. It's a lot of playing psychologist for Ben Johnson to try to unlock the things that make Caleb tick, that make him motivated, that make him excited, that piss him off, maybe to the point where maybe pulling him out after one series during, you know, your first practice is to send a message and say, hey, I'm not going to stand for this. You better shape up. And I do think that's a positive from Ben Johnson during the training camp that we've seen as a certain standard that has to be met. And maybe that'll be one of those things that helps jar Caleb out of whatever rigmarole he was in for year number one.
Agreed. That's Adam Amin. He, of course, play-by-play man for the Bulls, the NFL, Major League Baseball, local DJ near you. And he is happy enough to join us. Yeah. And we're thankful for it here in studio. And we get another segment with him in studio. So we'll do that next. And Raheem and Harris talk a little more football, maybe a little baseball. And yes, I do have a Bulls question for Adam. So you won't want to miss that as well. That's all next here on The Score.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris. Rahimi and Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on 670 The Score.
This is Rahimi and Harris on 670 The Score, and the Hangout Show continues with not just Russ Dorsey from our last hour, but now Adam Amin, play-by-play man extraordinaire, baseball, football, Bulls, whatever you need. And I think just asking what we asked in the break is a good question. What is your Fox schedule that you know about so far for football?
They usually give us about a month to start the year, and then obviously it's kind of based on the hierarchy of the games and, you know, which crew you're working with and all that. So first month, week one, I'm doing Titans Broncos, so we get Cam Ward's NFL debut against the Defensive Player of the Year in Patrick Surtain. Bo Nix is coming. I think people forget that Denver was a playoff team last year. With a really strong campaign. They won 10 games with the rookie quarterback. Sean Payton's brought in some key players. Evan Ingram's there now. J.K. Dobbins signed a one-year deal. Their offensive line's pretty much intact. I like their defense. Titans are interesting just the way they were then when they played the Bears last season. I think they're a little better. I think Cam Ward's really good. People I talked to around the Miami program are really pumped for him because what we talked about, kind of already having a baseline of how to do this, how to be in the process of this. I think he's good at breaking down defenses. We'll see Aaron Rodgers' home debut with the Pittsburgh Steelers week two. And then DK Metcalf, new Steeler, is going to face his former team in Seattle. I think the Steelers are going to be better than people realize because Aaron Rodgers was playing well second half of the year last year. Their defense didn't get any worse. I think their corners are good. I think Jalen Ramsey and Joey Porter on opposite sides of the defense is scary. So I'm intrigued by them. I don't know what Seattle is going to look like, but I'm excited for Sam Darnold and Cooper Kupp and kind of the new look for them.
We have a question for you.
Oh,
by we, I mean I.
Yes.
What would you say based on what you just said? Let's call it the ceiling for the Pittsburgh Steelers this year. What would you say their ceiling is?
I think in that division, probably 10 wins is their ceiling. Because okay. You still got to play Baltimore. You still got to play Cincinnati. I don't think Cleveland is an easy out, regardless of who their quarterback is. It's just always a tough game against Cleveland. They have a tendency to make it a grinded out game, and that's the typical AFC North games. I say ceiling is 10 wins and making the playoffs.
And in the playoffs?
I think they can win a game. Matchup based, I think they can win a game.
The okay. Ravens, the Chiefs, and the Bills exist.
Listen, the Bengals exist.
If they get the right game, you know, maybe they're a higher wild card or something like that. Maybe they're the 5 seed. Maybe you face, you know, like the AFC South champ in your first game. Then yeah, I think you got a shot.
Who is sticking out to you NFL wise? I know you just mentioned, I think for very valid reasons, Denver. But who else is maybe sticking out to you that people might not know the changes they made are really going to positively affect them?
I mean, I would say Buffalo, but that's not a shock, right? We kind of know what Buffalo's. I think they got better. I think the addition of Bosa helps them out. Obviously, they just signed Gabe Davis to you know boost their receiving core. I think they're going to be a better downfield threat team this year. Keon Coleman's a good downfield receiver. I think adding Josh Palmer, who's a great deep ball threat with the Chargers last couple of years. But that's kind of expected. I'm literally looking at my notes. Walking through them right now. I think Tennessee will be interesting. I don't know if they're going to be a 7-win team. I think they're probably closer to a 5-win team, which is still an improvement on where they were. Vegas will be interesting. The Raiders, I think, in the AFC are an interesting team. Adding Pete Carroll, 73-year-old Pete Carroll, who still does wind sprints or whatever he does on the sideline before a game. Geno at least solidifies their quarterback position. They made games difficult on a lot of their AFC West opponents last year, so I think just having a more competent quarterback, because they had three or four different starting quarterbacks last year. I think Geno coming in is interesting. Chip Kelly's their new OC. Brock Bowers still exists, to use a Layla parlance there. Like, he's still one of the top pass-catching tight ends in the league, and Geno works really well with tight ends. Ashton Gentry's their new running back. And some folks I talked to a couple of weeks ago think that they might have the potential to be a top-10 defense. Do I believe that? I'm not there. I'm not sold on that. Could they maybe be a top half of the league, which would be an improvement for them? Yeah, I think so. I think Cincinnati is really good with Joe Burrow, but I still have questions about their defense. Baltimore is still really good. They're one of the scariest offenses around. Tampa Bay, Hassan Reddick comes over, right? I know you guys are familiar with him with his Philly time.
I'm trying to figure out if he's going to be back to being Hassan Reddick after everything disastrous that went on last year.
I think he's playing in a system that he's going to like. I think a Todd Bowles defense that loves to be blitz heavy but likes to mess with you a little bit, I think that's going to play into Hassan Reddick really well. I'm curious about Washington. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they can recreate what they did a year ago. I think adding Deebo Samuel helps. You still have Terry McLaurin. They got a little worse on defense. You know, they lost some key guys up front. Like, losing Jonathan Allen is like, that's a rough loss for them, and they had some back end of the defense problems anyway, as you saw against Philadelphia late in the year in the playoffs. So I'm curious about them. I don't know. I want to believe in Arizona. I want to think Arizona's good. Like,
they have flashes. They're
so
Bears
fun.
Game.
Like, Kyler Murray is fun. Trey McBride is really good. I've always appreciated James Conner. I've covered that kid for 13 years since he was a running back at Pitt, and I always wanted good for that guy. I just thought he was a good guy and a really tough, hard-nosed running back. I just don't know. I don't think, and I think the point of all this is to be like, is there any consistency in these teams? San Francisco, you could say the same thing about. Like, are they going to, everybody's getting a little older. You're paying all the, you know, Brock Purdy made a lot of money. you're going to, that window is closing because that money goes away now in the next 2 or 3 years in your books. So I just don't know. I think Philly, that's why I look at Philly, Detroit. They're still the two best teams in the NFC to me. Even though I know the Packers suddenly are seemingly closing, I still think Detroit and Philly are the two best teams in the NFC. I think Buffalo, Kansas City, Baltimore are the three best teams in the AFC, and everybody else is fighting to upset somebody in the playoffs.
That is why I love it, as we talk with Adam Amin in studio here on Raheemy and Harris. He is the NFL MLB play-by-play broadcaster for Fox Sports. Of course, you know him from his work locally with the Chicago Bulls on CHSN. And I think this is what makes the NFL every year so beautiful, because you take out teams like, I don't know, the New Orleans Saints and everybody else, you can see a window, a path, whether it's like the Carolina Panthers, whether it's the Arizona Cardinals, there's a path to being relevant for so many teams.
Always in the NFL. Here's the note I write down. I have this whole section in my notes. No professional sports league has more parity than the NFL since 1990, which is 35 consecutive seasons. At least four new teams have earned a spot in the postseason every year following a year they weren't in it. Wow. So every year, you have four new teams that weren't in the playoffs the year before. This past year was Minnesota. They had 7 wins in 23. They had 14 last year. Washington went from 4 wins to 12 wins. Chargers went from 5 to 11. And then one of the teams that we were just talking about, Denver, went from 8-9 to 10-7. All of them made the playoffs after they missed it 2 years ago. The league is built to cycle through parity. It's the perfect schedule structure, too, because I don't know if you guys notice it, but the winning teams play the winning teams and then also get to play the losing teams. So you have opportunities to play bigger teams that maybe start to go downwards in terms of salaries. So you have a shot to maybe upset them with your draft picks that you've got. Like, it's just a perfect structure. It's created to make parity. It is the perfect formula in professional sports in North America. So it's why every team has a shot. The draft capital that you end up with every single year, every April, like, there's always high quality players across the board. If you draft well, you're going to be in the conversation. That's why the Giants are in the conversation again to at least be interesting, because, well, they drafted well, and I like Abdul Carter, and maybe Jackson Dart will be the starter by week six, and maybe the two new backs they drafted might be impactful. Like, all of this stuff makes a quick impact in this league more so than any other sports league in the country.
Rob Manfred's real jealous.
Well, and speaking of that, you're also calling major baseball games for Fox. So what are your impressions as we get ready for September as to what stands out to you? Am I making you look up another note? Are you you share your preparation with everybody on Instagram. Is that a OneNote?
It's a Microsoft OneNote thing. So I was like, oh, let me look at my MLB folder, because I haven't called the game since, you know, in like 3 weeks. And my next one is like a week from Thursday. I'll do the Cubs game on the 18th too, which actually may end up being somewhat important. They're playing the Reds in Cincinnati, so that actually may end up having some impact once we get to September 18th.
That's a Thursday at 6:15.
Thank you very much. So I'm getting prepped for the American League playoffs this year. There's very little consistency across the board. I think it makes for great potential playoff series. I think the National League is very interesting, but the teams are better. I think they're of a higher quality. I think between the Yankees' struggles being up and down all season long, their offense going through a tremendous slide for basically 3 months, Boston being the hottest team in baseball at one point, and then being able to lose six straight. I think the Mariners are really fun. I think their pitching is as good as there is in baseball. And can you help Cal Raleigh a little bit? That's why they went out and got Gino Suarez. Like, you can at least solidify that lineup. They can compete for a division against Houston. I just saw Houston a couple of weeks ago. It's like, now they look like their old selves, even though the roster is completely turned over. Correa moves to third base, and he looks great. The Central, the Tigers look great all year, but they've also had some rocky stretches over the last month and a half. There's no consistency right now, and that's, again, what's fun about getting to October. It's kind of the dog days of August and September, but getting to October means it's not about who's the best team is, and I hear multiple players saying that exact same thing on teams that are in pennant races right now or in playoff chases. They're all saying it doesn't matter who the best team is anymore. It's who gets to be the hottest team at the right time. That's why the Dodgers have had struggles in years past. They finally put it together last year. But if their offense, which was jockeying with the Cubs for the best offense in baseball for a whole half of the season, if suddenly five of their guys go cold in the wrong week, now you're looking at an upset. And that's what makes that, you know, that portion of the year, that portion of the American sports calendar really, really fun. So some of the inconsistencies and lack of quality at times actually makes for some pretty interesting playoff baseball.
Do we hold our Bulls question for Adam for the next segment?
Oh, yeah. I think it's the exclamation point on this visit.
It's a common topic on our show, but with each day, it grows a little more pressing.
Oh, yeah.
We got to talk some Bulls with Adam Amin next in studio. This is Rahimi and Harris on 670 The Score.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, Rahimi and Harris. Middays 10 a.m. to 2 on 670 The Score.
This is Rahimi and Harris on 670 The Score. What a wonderful Tuesday it's been, hanging out with Adam Amin, play-by-play man for your team. Bulls, NFL, Bears, Major League Baseball, he's got it. And then we just chatted with Spiegel and Holmes that are coming up at the top of the hour. That was fun. Handshake talk. Bad handshakes are worse than bad hugs.
I feel like bad handshakes are worse than bad hugs. I don't know if it.
I do too, because a hug is still effort, and you're still willing to press your body against somebody else's for a certain amount of time.
No,
you don't do that with a bad handshake.
That's fair.
Handshake,
you can get out
like
of
maybe
a bad
you get
handshake.
My fingertips.
You get out of a bad handshake relatively easily compared
here's
to
why,
a bad hug.
Here's why
I
think the bad hug is worse than the bad handshake, because if you're hugging someone, there's already supposed to be a baseline level of comfort, so it's more disappointing. Because like, bro, I thought. Like, if somebody you know, like, you're hugging them. And a handshake, it could be just a complete stranger who just sucks.
A hug can just be, like, a time of day, though. Bad handshake indicates, like, leadership skills to me.
Here's what it is. Bad hug is sad. Bad handshake is gross.
Okay. You know what? I'll follow you on that one.
Bad hug, sad. Bad handshake, gross.
Adam and I were cringing at the palm down.
You're like, oh, hey, good to meet you, man.
Clam.
And just kind of,
what's happening?
Slowly
there?
Flailing a fingertip at you. Nobody wants that.
Nobody. Okay, I hate to break this up because it's such good talk, but there's a question that is plaguing the midday show, especially one Robbie Triano, but it really has been a shared topic of ours.
Okay.
What do you think's going to happen with Josh Giddey?
I mean, I'm as in the dark as anybody who's tuning into this. I still feel like he'll end up in Chicago. It'll probably be for a relatively friendly price, I think. Here's the thing. I think Josh Giddey could get $30 million from a team in the NBA. I don't know if it's going to be a team he wants to play for, and I think that's the other thing you have to take into consideration. Are you willing to, and mind you, this is Giddey's second contract, right? He's pretty much finished up his first deal. Everybody talks about the second contract because this is the life-changing money. No matter what he makes, who among us in this room or anybody who's listening is going to count between $20 and $30 million for us a year if you're going to make it for 4 years? Who cares? It's generational wealth automatically. So you're playing for the third contract. If you play in a place where you feel like you can do more, let's just keep it selfish. Have better numbers. Put up better stats. Be in a bigger leadership role. Whatever it may be that makes you more attractive to your next job, like think about it for any of us who have had to be in a career and then thought, all right, well, I want to do this well so that the next time I'm up for a job, my resume looks even that much better. I think that's kind of the thinking along those lines. So is it going to be a potentially $40 million, maybe $30 million, maybe $20 million pay cut, whatever it's going to be over the lifetime of a 3 or 4 year, or probably 4 year deal would be less than that over a 3 year. But if it's a, you know, somewhere between a $20 and $40 million pay cut, you're already getting the generational wealth. If you can think for the future, and I think Josh Giddey has a very bright future. He's 22. He's one of the captains of the Boomers, one of the up-and-coming international programs in world basketball. And you're going to be in a high-level market playing probably decent basketball, you would hope. He would still put up some of the numbers that he was putting up in those last 20 to 25 games, which he's certainly capable of doing. You're playing for the long haul. So I'm playing as Josh Giddey's agent. This is what I would be telling him. Don't go to a franchise that might pay you 28, but you're going to lose more games than you will in Chicago. You have more of a trajectory upwards playing in the East than you do in the West. You have a better shot of being in the playoffs right now if you're in the East.
True.
And you have a better shot of playing in the playoffs or the play-in or having some form of a chance in Chicago rather than Charlotte, Washington, if you end up going to Portland, if you're in New Orleans, if you're in, you know, name a franchise out West that you haven't really thought about a whole lot in the last 6 months, you have a better shot of doing good things here.
Sacramento.
I mean, the Bulls West, as we've come to know it.
I mean,
like, you have a better shot of doing what you want for the long haul of your career here compared to somebody else, somewhere else. So, Robbie, that's my answer. I think he ends up here. I think if he ends up here for 24, 26, you feel pretty good about that. You at least have your starting point guard for the next three or four seasons and you walk away happy.
Because here's the thing. Like we said, bull season is coming at you.
It's a month away from preseason. Like, it's legitimately like 4 weeks away from preseason games will be on, you know, the score at some point, you know?
October 7th is the first preseason game on the schedule, like on the Bulls schedule. I don't have the broadcast schedule in front of me, but yeah, man, it's here.
Josh Giddey turns 23 on October 10th, so yeah. 3 days later. So to your point, Adam, if he was going to get the big money that he wants, like whether it's 150 or whatever, that time has passed because he's a restricted free agent, meaning any team could have figured out a way to make room for him by making trades, whatever. They did not. He has not signed an
offer
sheet.
Golden State didn't go through with this Kuminga thing that seemingly was rumored for a while. And again, the franchises that possibly could pay you that money, is that going to be a better situation than what you have right now?
The Bulls are doing the right thing for them. I applaud the Bulls doing the right thing for the organization.
Patrick Williams.
I also think, though, if you're Jonathan Kuminga, my word,
what
are you going
to
work
away
in a couple weeks? Like, what do you do?
What do I have to do to get out of here? Like, this is Costanza dragging the World Series trophy out in the parking lot and just being like, fire me now, boys! And the Lacombe family's just like, hey, isn't that Jonathan Kuminga a quirky dude? Let's hang on to him for as long as possible.
His situation is not that unlike what Giddey's situation was in Oklahoma City, knowing that you're not a fit for what they're trying to do. But for Kuminga, it's like you could be here and score points as part of our second unit, basically, because you don't fit with Steph and Draymond and Jimmy Butler. And I think you're right. This situation tailored for him to, I don't know, average a triple-double.
Sure.
Like that can get him money in that next contract.
If he averages a triple double, man.
Look at his numbers post All-Star break.
Yeah.
And you'll see what I'm talking about.
To be a 12-10-10 guy, like, is a valuable commodity in the NBA. I'm like, this is what people thought Ben Simmons was going to be, and he never really got to that point outside of maybe a year or two. And I think, again, do I think Josh Giddey's as good of a defender as Ben Simmons was? No, but that's, hopefully there's some room for growth there using, you know, the abilities and size that he has. I just feel like if you're playing for the long haul, you're playing for, if you're an NBA player now, you want to eventually become a $200 to $300 million player, right? That means you're the elite of the elite, and you've made the money that the highest level, essentially outside of the top tiers of the LeBrons who are going to be billionaires and Steph Curry's of the world, like outside of that, like you're talking about elite level money. So if that's your long-term goal, if I'm just talking as an, again, I'm kind of taking the point of an agent here, where we're just thinking about dollars and cents based off of the talent that my client seemingly has shown. Like, if you're playing for the long haul to be $150-$200 million player in 10 years, you're on the trajectory for it. Like, the commodities that the skills you have are the commodity right now. Like, people need rebounding from the guard position in a more fluid, positionless league. Like, more 6'7", 6'8", players have to be able to rebound against guys who are 6'10", 6'11", and Giddey does that at a pretty high level. You need offensive initiators, you know, and he is one of those. And how many of those do you really see? There's half the teams in this league maybe have a guy that they really feel good about. A third of the teams in this league have a guy that they would go to war with. Mm-hmm. So I think Giddey could be one of those guys. Yeah, would it be good if he was a 16 or 17 point a night guy? Yeah, sure, maybe, but he's not Russell Westbrook. He's a different kind of player, and I think he's the type of player that you're going to have that skill set in one or two players. To have it in one is a convenience. I think that's the type of player you need to be a competitive team in the NBA as it continues to get more fluid, more positionless in terms of size and personnel.
I can't wait to see how this ends. I'll just tell you, post All-Star break last year, 21.2 points per game, 10.7 rebounds per game, 9.3 assists per game, win or lose. And they did win more games than they lost after the All-Star break. Giddey's got a place.
He's
somewhere.
A goat. Yeah. Giddey's goat. Giddey.
This is where it goes.
Robbie.
He's my goat.
That was such a I was born in 2002 mentality, Robbie. Come on.
He also has a Detroit Pistons t-shirt on right now. I just want to point that out.
Yeah, Robbie's a little emotionally all over the place with his sports choices.
Well,
because
the Pistons were good again this year, man. The Pistons were
I'm trying
fun.
To transition to become a Chicago sports fan, though. And the Bulls, I think, are the team I'm going to like the most.
The Pistons had too much talent to do what they did in the season where they lost that massive losing streak. Like that was
to go from one to that a year ago to being like, I mean, I think the NBA is just kind of nutty right now with coaches. I think it's a Billy Donovan conversation as well. Like, I don't think Billy Donovan's the problem with the Bulls. I don't think that the players are the problem. I think there's a lot of issues that kind of don't fall under the people that we have a tendency to blame, which are usually players and coaches. And I can understand that. But good coaching in this league is hard to come by. And
evidently.
I think J.B. Bickerstaff got let go kind of unceremoniously in Cleveland. And I know they were the number one seed. They still got bounced in the second round. So I look at what J.B. Bickerstaff did in Detroit and to take a young team and kind of get him to believe the same way he did in Cleveland. I think that's a big deal. Like that's still hard to come by. And I think at his best, like if you can say the best thing about Billy Donovan, that's probably the thing that you can lean towards is his ability to get the most out of younger players the way some of these franchises that are starting to get back on the come up, the way that they've done. I think Rick Carlisle has done a wonderful job of that over the last handful of years now in Indiana. Bickerstaff, as we mentioned, I think, you know, like that's why the Thibodeau firing in New York is so head-scratching, because good coaching, tactical NBA coaching is hard to come by.
I also think it's that the level overall is so high that you can't afford as a coach, the pressure is on you so much to have either, you can't have like a slumping year and you can't have like an even slightly slumping approach. Like first time they were in the conference finals in 25 years, it's just unacceptable.
It
but I'm pro Tibbs, so you know.
Yeah, I mean, again, I know I'm coming from a place of like, I think Tibbs is a really good NBA coach.
You're not
coach.
Alone in that thought.
You know, like Spoelstra is a really good NBA coach and the team fluctuates, but for the most part, there's a level of consistency that you always see. And a lot of that has to do with the guy on the sideline.
Adam, thank you for addressing all of our sports thoughts.
This is the best I can do.
Especially
all right,
don't
come at me in a month and a half when I'm wrong on all of this stuff. I just know I'm
I know.
It's fine.
And if you missed the Bears talk, that was in our 1 p.m. segment. We got a text about it, and I'm like, I'm sorry. You can listen to it on the Odyssey app. Go to that rewind feature. Adam Amin, thank you so much.
You guys
Thanks
are awesome.
So much,
I love
Adam.
You guys. Appreciate you.
And we'll make sure to publicize his next DJ gig when it comes. We will transition with Spiegel and Holmes next on The Score.